Good morning and welcome to PSA Today. I'm your host, Jessica Levity. With me on today's show from Nevada Youth Empowerment Project, I've got Monica.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. Your title, Executive Director?
Yep.
I mean, this is your baby.
Yeah, I founded or I birthed it in 2007, and we've just been working on just being a better, more effective, more efficient, more useful agency to help the community become better.
You're incredible. Let's start with the mission statement of NYEP.
Okay, so our mission statement is to empower young people with the skills and tools and resources they need to put a life together so that they can be established young adults. We were, I think, giving ourselves too much credit in the beginning when we opened up. We had really thought that we could make successful people, and we've since outgrown that thought.
Tell me about this evolution.
Yes, we can't make anybody be anything. All we can do is support people to become what they wish to become. So if we have a young girl that comes in that, you know, wants to go to college and become a veterinarian or a doctor or, you know, an airline pilot or whatever it is that she wants to do, all that we can merely do is connect her to the resources, to the tools where she can make the most of that opportunity if it's presented to her. However, we've ran across a lot of people during the years that aren't really in a place where they're ready to make the most of opportunities that are presented to them. So that's where we realize that it isn't really about what we have to offer. Someone has to be ready to receive what we have to offer and make the most of it.
Wow, that's huge. And that says a lot about your organization that you were willing to grow.
We want to be effective. We don't just want to take people's money and not ever see better outcomes and not ever see the problem that someone's trying to address get better. And so through that, we've had to kind of look at really hard at what we're doing and say, what do we say we're doing and how do we know we're doing that?
So talk about your background and then the journey and the place that you were in 2007 and how you ended up creating this nonprofit.
Well, I was working at another nonprofit in 2007 where we were doing housing-based services for a lot of juvenile justice kids. So kids coming out of detention at 18 but couldn't reunify with their families or couldn't go back to their communities. And then also foster youth, which is the captive audience that people know a lot about. You know, you have foster youth that have been raised in the foster system and they weren't lucky enough to be adopted by a family. So they basically are aging out of the system without a family to support them as they become adults. And so those are generally the kids that we were working with primarily in the beginning were the juvenile justice kids and the foster kids. And through that, working with the behavioral psychologists, we started to realize that what do we say that we're doing? How do we know that we're doing it? And then how do we find those kids that would make the most of that so that we're not just out there providing it to everybody, but we're providing it to the ones that really want it. And so over the years, we've been really able to hone in on our intake application, our intake processes. And we've just gotten really, I mean, all we do is work with 18 to 21 year old girls, and we're really good at it because that's all we do all day. So how some people can sit home and be a parent all day, we basically are paid to be parents all day to these kids to ensure that they finish school, that they save money, and that they find their own independent housing, that they actually do put that life together so that they can break free of poverty and lifelong system dependency.
Well said. Yeah. So talk about the programs that NYEP offers.
So our main program that we offer is our community living program, which is our 11-component independent living housing-based curriculum. So this is the curriculum that we built with a behavioral psychologist over 8 years. We measure outcomes for the girls that are in our program. The outcomes we measure are typing scores, chore completions, school attendance, volunteer attendance, work attendance, bank savings, problem-solving skills, mixed martial arts skills. So we really do keep score and track of where they were when they came in the program and where they are when they leave at the end. And through that, an evolution of some other types of services came out because there was simply a need and we couldn't find something to address the need. So we ended up developing a clothing closet, which prior to Mayor Sheevy being mayor, she was on our board for many years and helped us out tremendously by starting that clothing closet out. So all the new girls that come in can get clothes from there. And we also help a lot of kids in the community from there. We also have an affordable housing site that we partner with the city of Reno on. And what we found is when girls were leaving our program, we didn't have affordable housing in Reno for these kids that are making a lot less than $56,000 a year. They couldn't find affordable rent. So we had to create an affordable housing site so that they can continue on with their goals, so that they didn't just get stopped right in their tracks and then have to come up with a whole different kind of a plan. We also do the annual homeless youth point in time count, which is coming up in at the end of January. And we do that for the city of Reno so that we can know exactly how many 18 to 24-year-olds that we have that are unsheltered, as well as some of the characteristics and prevalence that are occurring in that population.
So what is the journey of a girl who comes into your program? What is most likely her background, and best case scenario, what is she going to see at the end of her time with you?
So the kind of kids that are coming to NYEP are first and foremost willing to do what it takes to earn things. And they're able to do what it takes to earn things. So what we really don't like to set up is a situation where a kid really wants to live in a place where they take the bus every day, but they're not really capable of going out and taking the bus every day on their own. Our program truly is independent living. So even though we do have a staff there 7 days a week, there is no staff there overnight. And there's no staff there to deal with you handholding treatment issues every day, or handholding, why aren't you going to school? Why aren't you doing this? So the program really is an independent living program. So it's a program for kids that are looking for a supportive environment, but more responsibility.
Nice.
Kind of like a supported step out program to adulthood, very similar to what you would do with your own kids at home.
Right.
You would start layering on some responsibilities, see how they do, give them some more, see how they do. And then you would look at transitioning and where might they live with a friend? Are they going to go to the dorms? These kids don't have anybody looking out for them in that way. So when they come in, they generally don't have high school completed. And we really focus in on proficiency completion so that they can apply for scholarships and college dollars. So we're not really looking at just attendance diplomas and things like that. So we're looking, so at the end of their stay, they're looking at a high school diploma or proficiencies pass. So if they'd like to go to college or certificate program, the door is open for them to do that. They also have some skills to apply at a job that they've learned volunteering. So all of them have to go to volunteer sites. We do individual sites and group sites. They also have some money saved, and they know about spending, and they know their spending habits and behaviors, so they know what to look out for. They also will have a budget created. They'll have calendar skills. They'll have completed 20 different meal plans, so they can cook 20 different meals if they needed to. They can do that. They know how to shop on a budget. They know how to clean a house to a standard. So there's quite a few things that they learn upon completion. It's just like at your house. If you're teaching your kid how to cook, some kids like cooking and some kids don't like cooking. It really has nothing to do with the amount of time we spend with them doing something. It's our likes and dislikes inside.
Right.
So there are some girls that, you know, naturally start baking, naturally start cooking. Some girls that realize they don't want to cook and they don't want to bake, and they're trying to think of other ways of how they can get their nutrition every day. So it really is a program where you really get to see these girls within the context of their daily lives. So you get to see what's going to jam them up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Beautiful. And they're so blessed to have so many people working with you. What kind of staff? You said you have a behavioral psychologist. There's you. Who else is working with these girls?
So in the beginning, we were operating a lot like a Medicaid home. So we did have a behavioral psychologist, a clinical social worker. We had a lot of what I would say professional staff on site. We are moved more towards independent living and less treatment focus. And so the staff that we have on site are positive professional adults. These are people who have finished high school. They've gotten jobs. They've saved up money. They've rented apartments. They've bought houses. They've bought cars. They've accessed college funds. They've basically done the things that we're teaching these girls how to do. And they want to put their time and energy into doing that, into spending time empowering young girls. And so those are the type of people we have working at NYEP. We also have a graduate, a former graduate of NYEP working at NYEP.
I was going to ask you, so you've been around for 8 years, so you have to see some of these girls really, I mean, 8 years, that's almost a decade. Mm-hmm. Do you have any like great powerhouse stories of somebody who is just really thriving because NYEP changed their path?
So my standards are pretty high. When people know me personally, I mean, when you say a power story, I'm like, well, none of them have become president yet. So that's like what I'm, but you know, top of my standard is. But, you know, the gal that works for us now, you know, she went to study in Spain for a year.
Wow.
And then she also worked at a camp in Idaho with kids. We have another girl who's married and has a couple kids, very, very happy. We have other kids who have just broken through their cycle of having just very unhealthy relationships with their family that kind of prevented them from going in the direction that they needed to go through in their life. So that was another thing, is that success and putting the life together takes a very long time. Yeah. You know, so if they're working and they're not on welfare and they're not hurt, that's probably a improvement from what they where they would be if they had not come to the program. They most likely would have fell into the cycle of poverty that they came from. And so the fact that, you know, they are in second semester at college or third semester, and they've held a job for 2 years, or they've maintained relationships with their same friends for 2 years and not just new friends all the time. Those are the steps and the changes that will indicate long-term changes.
That's beautiful. Yeah. And to talk more, you know, into the realistic side, what types of behaviors can get a girl removed from the program?
Non-complying with we have a lot of rules around the house to keep the house safe, and we have a lot of expectations of the program to ensure that you're making the best use of your time in the program. So if you don't come home at nighttime at your curfew and you're not coming home to participate in the program, those are certain ways to get kicked out of the program. Our discipline in the program is very structured out. It's not a surprise to anybody. And so we start with a memo or maybe just a face-to-face, like, hey, where were you yesterday? You weren't at group. And depending on what the excuse was, it may go into something a little bit heavier, like a memo to say you're not to miss group. Group is a mandatory class around here. And if they continue to oppose or just not want to participate in the program, then it gets followed up by a discharge letter, which gives them 30 days to say, you've been doing this really well, but these are the things we need you to improve on. And then it gives them some time to do it. But it also says in the letter, if you continue to do these behaviors, this is what we're going to do next.
Yeah.
And so we warn them about everything. And then we follow that up with a 3-day eviction notice. If they aren't complying by then, you know, we're on to the 3-day eviction. Because we're private funded, we don't receive county, state, or federal dollars. It's really important that we make the most of our donor money. And so we don't let kids sit around on our donors' dollars.
Talk about the volunteer program and why you decided to put this inside your program. And I mean, it's forced volunteerism, but it's brilliant.
Well, a lot of different – initially, volunteering came about because we needed a free way to train youth with employment skills. Yep. And so that was the initial reason. Secondary reason is that they need to be at a supervised, monitored activity, and it was nice to have somebody else supervising and monitoring them for part of the day. But the ultimate reason is because it gives them a sense of purpose greater than themselves. They are very focused in on themselves and what's wrong with their life and how their life's broken and how this person doesn't do that for them and this person didn't love them enough and this person didn't do this. And when they go out and volunteer, it really removes them thinking about themselves.
Yeah.
They then get to see that there's other people that are worse off than them or maybe better off than them or maybe couldn't wait to see them all day or they had so much fun. And so they come home with kind of a different perspective of instead of talking about woe is me, they talk about how Billy wanted to do this all day, and it just takes their focus off things. Yeah. And then as a director of the agency, I really see that, you know, volunteering is our daily vote on how we want to see our community.
Yeah.
It's how
well said.
We get involved with things because we want to see this change or this happen. And so really raising these girls to believe that they need to be part of what's going on in their community regularly, not just once a year to feed at the kitchen on Christmas Day, but every single day, every month, the community has a need.
Right.
There's stuff going on that they can be part of and they can help make their community the way they want their community to be.
And they get to pick what they want to spend
Absolutely.
Their time volunteering doing.
Right.
That's awesome. Yeah. And you are so well networked in the community. I see your girls everywhere. And it's just such a great representation of your organization as well.
We're small, and so unless you know us, you would kind of go, what is that place all about? Because you'll go, why are they here? What's going on there? It's because when we work with a girl, we work with her holistically.
Right.
And so depending on what she needs, we may be creating a relationship with someone because they want to go to yoga or because they want to learn how to drive or because they want to learn how to do production equipment and they want to see what the radio station is all about.
Totally.
And so it does allow us to create lots and lots and lots and lots of connections in the community for very specific groups. reasons. And then hopefully later we'll get to do something else and something else.
Do you guys have a waiting list? What's your outreach like?
Oh, we can't outreach too much because we're full all the time.
All the
time. So I hate to go out there and get some kids' hopes up and then us not have a bed for 4 months for them. But the waiting, we don't really do waiting lists for transition-aged youth, which are the 18 to 21-year-olds. And the reason why we don't is because if they need a place to live today and they don't find it today, they will be homeless. So they generally will have a plan B, plan C, plan D. Even if they're not good ideas, they are going to line something up up.
Okay. So where is your funding coming from? You said it's mostly private. Are these grants? Are these fundraisers? Is it both?
Yeah, it's both. We have a lot of private foundations in town that are very generous. We have a very generous community with private foundations. And because we've built a curriculum where we can produce weekly report cards, we can produce outcomes and let people know how many people are graduating from school, how much money is being saved, what are typing scores, what are chore completion rates, what are they getting fined for, what are they getting extra points for. People really like to know the details of how their money is impacting. And so we've been able to create a lot of partnerships with private foundations and corporations in town. And then we also do, you know, a few fundraisers a year. We have our Fall Harvest Festival that we do in September. We have the rummage sale, the lawyer's rummage sale that we do in May. So we do a couple things throughout the year. We're going to start a new campaign, Spare Change for Real Change. That's going to be coming out in the Ben's Liquors and the Burger Kings.
Awesome.
You'll be seeing that soon. We're always trying to come up with new ways. We really feel like the population that we're working with is not a welfare population. We have welfare populations of chronically homeless and mentally ill people that probably will have to be taken care of on some level for the rest of their lives. And those welfare dollars should really be designated for those populations.
Interesting. So talk about the homeless youth count. I know we talked to Meredith about it 2 weeks ago. We talked to Rise last week about it, but we can't talk about it too much. So give us your spiel.
All right. So the point in time count is so important. And I'm probably going to talk about a couple different things than Meredith and Katie talked about. The point in time count's purpose is to survey homeless youth. What we're surveying them is to find out, how do they get homeless? Why are you homeless? What do you need to not be homeless? Are you using drugs right now? Do you have a disability? What was the highest level of education that you had? We really need to find out what the characteristics are of this population so that we can provide the right kinds of services and programs to help them come out of homelessness and into stability. So the survey it's about 20 questions long. We'll have 18 to 24-year-olds survey homeless 18 to 24-year-olds. And last year we counted 75 out there. It's going to be very cold that night out there. We'll be out there 24 hours on January 28th. That's a Thursday. We'll be out there midnight to midnight. And just trying to count as many as we possibly can. The good news is, as I did see, that we have almost $300,000 new dollars coming into the community designated for the 18 to 24-year-old population. Ooh. And I know that came out of the work of doing the homeless count.
Last year.
Well, this will be the fifth year. And so it takes multiple years to show that there is a problem. And so we started this 5 years ago. And so it just takes time, but we're starting to see some of the rewards responses to that data.
So, and you reported, we reported 75 last year, but what do we think it really is?
If you look at, there's about 200 kids a year that are coming into detention with nowhere to live. You have about 50 kids aging out in Northern Nevada, out of foster care every year, without a family to go to, without means to take care of themselves. Then you have kids that just have parents that are not adequately parenting them. Or you have parents that have been arrested, deported. The problem with this population is that they're not captive. The only captive population we have are the foster kids because they're in a system and we can count them. The other kids we can't count. We can't count the street kids. The jail does some counts where if they can break those numbers out, but they generally don't break the ages out. But it's hundreds. You know, we have hundreds of kids that need a place to stay. They need services. They need programs.
So what do we need for the homeless youth count? We need volunteers and we need donations of products because one of the things that you guys do to honor these kids, but also to get them to come be counted, is give them things.
Yes. It's it really is the one time of the year. I know that the there's a youth drop-in center that opened about a year ago. But prior to that, there was no effort at reaching these youth separately out of the adult shelter. And the youth drop-in center serves them up to 21. So we still have 22, 23, and 24-year-olds that are not being served specifically by any agency. So we're really trying to do a tent and sleeping bag collection right now. And we're trying to collect 40 so that we can at least get them out of the elements so that they're not freezing outside.
Right.
Okay. Right. And then naturally all of the regular hygiene things you would think of, sewing kits, tampons, pads, which are hard to come by. Having your period in the streets is the worst. And so having those kind of supplies, which we really don't think of too often, mm-hmm. because it's just for the females, condoms, snack packs, any nuts, any fruit roll-ups, any mm-hmm. type of granola bars, anything that's mobile that they can easily put into their backpack, we're collecting. And so please, if you have stuff, bring it down. You can bring it to Nevada Youth Empowerment Project, Build Our Center, Rise. Rise has a bunch of drop-off locations. It's going to be fairly easy to get involved, I think.
Perfect. And how can someone get involved with NYEP?
Check out our website, nyep.org. There's some opportunities right on there under current needs. If you go underneath there, you can see what our volunteer needs are. We are looking for people to get involved, but we like for people to understand our organization a little bit.
Yeah. Well said. So before I let you go, this is a question I don't ask all of my guests, but I definitely ask the guests that I think will have a great answer. You are out in this community. You are networking with other nonprofits. You're networking with the city. What does Reno need?
In 2016, what my goal is anyways to help Reno is to put sunlight on issues that we need to be aware of. There are so many issues going on in Reno that for the longest time, the leaders of Reno and people who have been tasked to kind of take care of these problems kind of move it around, sweep it under the rug. They keep it away from the people who don't want to see it. And we really need to bubble these issues to the surface, and we all need to join hands, and this needs to become all of our issues, not just a handful of people, but as a community. Homelessness needs to become the community's issue. Blight in downtown needs to become the community's issue. So that's going to be my goal, is just bringing honesty and sunlight to issues to help people better understand them.
Okay, so homelessness in Reno, how can people get involved to start making it a community issue?
First, it starts understanding it. Homelessness is not the problem. It's the end result of the problem.
Mm.
So it's an onion. And, you know, people are conditioned poorly growing up, and they resort to drugs and alcohol. And then long term, we see homelessness. We see people that were broken or damaged and they could not repair themselves from there. So helping somebody is expensive. It's not 4 cans of food. It's not a backpack. It's expensive. To make a difference in somebody's life longer than today is going to take deeper understanding and deeper commitment from us as a community to make longer term investments into places like the shelter and into long-term housing programs, and then also giving our downtown shelter what it needs, which is more money to provide more professional services like psychologists and psychiatrists and clinical social workers and pharmacists to give out medication and get people stabilized down there before we expect to put them to work or get them into their own individual housing.
Man, amen to that. And real quick, organizations that you work with and love in this community, whether it's related to NYEP or not, that you would like to give a shout out to for anyone looking for resources on anything.
First, I'm going to say sorry if I don't say your name, mm-hmm. but I love Build Our Center. I love Rise. But I'm really loving Doors to Recovery, Stacey Mathewson Foundation right now.
Okay.
Every town does need a Stacey. I mean, she's came in, she's put in a regional strategic a plan for us to address substance abuse, including housing base. She just opened up the Josh Montoya 18 to 24 diversion home for boys. She also opened up the Jane Albury 18 to 24-year-old diversion home for girls. These are the types of things that are going to make, like, refresh our community with having responses to these social issues. So I'm really loving Doors to Recovery and Stacey Mathewson Foundation right now. I give them a huge freaking gold star for all the stuff they've done in our community.
Awesome. And I have never heard of them or had them on this show. Okay. So I'm going to be reaching out to them in the new year. Thank you for the recommendation. No problem. If you want to check out the website, it's nyep.org. Thank you so much for coming on the show today. You're such a great interview. I enjoyed so much. If you know a nonprofit event or organization that would benefit from some time on air with me, you can email me at publicaffairs@wilksreno.com. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week.